Imagine two biological timers. One is set for, well, a grueling all-day marathon of 12 hours,
Right.
and the other goes off in 15 minutes, literally before you could even finish a cup of coffee. You'd probably assume these two timers are wired to completely different machineries in your body,
I
right?
mean, that's exactly what you'd assume.
Yeah.
In pharmacology, wildly different durations usually mean wildly different biological mechanisms.
But that's where the world of psychedelics throws common sense completely out the window. We're talking about LSD and DMT,
Yeah.
the longest acting classic psychedelic and the absolute shortest. Yet somehow they unlock the exact same neurological door in your brain.
It's really one of the most fascinating paradoxes in neuroscience.
Welcome to your personalized deep dive. Today we're unpacking a July 2026 article from the OOTW Journal, Our Mission, to figure out how two molecules that are so chemically different can act more like, weird cousins than total opposites.
And whether you're tracking the massive clinical renaissance of psychedelics happening right now in 2026, or you're just deeply curious about how the mind works, putting these two molecules side by side is incredibly revealing.
Oh, absolutely.
It shows you the exact mechanisms your brain uses to construct and ultimately deconstruct your everyday reality.
I have to admit, I've been trying to wrap my head around this because if they hit the same receptor, how can the experience be so incredibly different?
Yeah, it's counterintuitive.
Right. But I guess before we get into why the trips are opposites, we need to understand what they actually share. Like, what is this single neurological door?
Right, let's start at the foundation.
Yep.
Both LSD and DMT belong to a class called classic serotonergic psychedelics.
Okay.
And that specific classification exists for one primary reason. They both act as agonists at the 5-HT2A serotonin receptor.
Okay, an agonist, meaning they don't just like block the receptor, they actively turn it on.
Exactly. They bind to it and flip it like a master switch.
Yeah.
Now, this specific receptor is densely packed on what we call layer 5 pyramidal neurons in your cortex.
Stop right there, because layer 5 pyramidal neurons sounds like something from an advanced biology exam.
Fair enough.
Why does it matter where the switch is?
Good point. Think of your cortex as having different layers of circuitry, almost like a computer motherboard.
Right.
Layer 5 is essentially the primary output layer. These pyramidal neurons are the main broadcast towers sending signals across your brain. So when a molecule like LSD or DMT flips the 5-HT2A switch on these specific towers, it creates a massive cascading effect.
So it's kind of taking over the broadcast.
Precisely. And that takeover causes a spike in cortical excitability. It triggers something neuroscientists call neural entropy.
Neural entropy. See, entropy usually means chaos or, disorder. Are you saying these drugs just scramble your brain into pure chaos?
Well, not chaos in a destructive sense, but rather a shift away from predictability.
Oh.
Right now, your brain is a highly organized, predictable machine. It relies on strict, top-down hierarchies to filter the world so you don't get overwhelmed. When neural entropy rises, that predictability drops. Your brain activity becomes far more diverse and less restricted by its usual habits.
So it takes the rigid filing system of my brain and essentially just like dumps the folders out on the floor.
Yes, and as those folders spill out, it profoundly affects a specific circuit called the default mode network, or the DMN.
Right, I've heard of that.
Yeah, the DMN is the neurological home of your ego. It's the network responsible for your self-referential thought, your daydreaming, and your sense of being a fixed, continuous you traveling through time.
So if I'm understanding the sequence here, the drug hits the 5-HT2A switch. That cranks up neural entropy, and the entropy effectively loosens the grip of the default mode network.
You got it. It temporarily flattens those top-down hierarchies.
Okay, so what does this all mean for the person experiencing it? If both drugs are doing this, is the 5-HT2A receptor basically like a tretroll alt delete for the brain's default operating system, regardless of which drug is pressing the
You
keys?
have a brilliant analogy, yes. The entropic brain theory suggests that both drugs initiate a system reboot that dismantles your rigid, everyday filters.
Wow.
And that shared endpoint, the temporary dissolving of the ego's grip on reality, is exactly why a marathon LSD trip and a hyperfast DMT breakthrough belong to the same fundamental family of experiences.
All right, I get the shared foundation now, but that brings us right back to the glaring
The
contradiction.
durations.
Yeah. If they are hitting the exact same reset button, why does LSD hang around for 12 hours while DMT is gone before I can even process what just happened?
To solve that mystery, we have to look at their physical chemistry. And a truly elegant discovery that researchers made back in 2017.
Okay, let's unpack this. Start with the marathon runner. What exactly is LSD doing?
So LSD is a complex semi-synthetic molecule.
Mm-hmm.
Albert Hofmann first created it in 1938 from a substance found in a fungus called ergot.
Right.
Structurally, it's large and rigid. And what's incredibly unique about it is its staggering potency.
Yeah, the OTW piece notes it's active in micrograms. Just so we're all on the same page, a microgram is 1/1000th of a gram.
It's tiny.
Imagine a grain of sand and then chop that into thousands of invisible pieces.
Yeah.
It's almost spooky that something that small can rewrite your reality for half a day.
It is staggering. And unlike DMT, LSD is not a surgical strike.
Mm.
It has a very broad pharmacological profile. It binds to a massive sweep of targets.
Oh, really?
Yes, it hits that 5-HT2A switch, but it also binds to other serotonin receptors, dopamine D1 and D2 receptors, and something called the tracheamine receptor, TAR1.
Wait, dopamine? I thought this was purely a serotonin thing. Does hitting dopamine receptors change the actual trip?
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
The dopamine binding is a big part of why LSD has such a stimulating, energetic edge to it.
Huh.
It contributes to that feeling of a long, sustained drive, rather than just purely visual or emotional effects.
Okay, but sweeping a bunch of receptors doesn't explain why it lasts for 12 hours. I mean, there are plenty of drugs that hit multiple receptors and wear off quickly.
True. The real secret to its duration wasn't uncovered until 2017, when scientists finally managed to crystallize LSD while it was actually bound to a human serotonin receptor.
They crystallized it.
Yeah, they wanted to see the physical shape of the connection.
And what did they see?
They found that when the LSD molecule slots into the receptor's binding pocket, a tiny part of the receptor itself, an extracellular loop called EL2, actually folds over the top of the LSD molecule.
Wait, it physically traps it like a lid.
Exactly like a lid. The receptor essentially closes a door over the molecule, locking it inside.
That is wild.
In pharmacology, we say the drug has an extraordinarily long receptor residence time.
Wow.
What's even wilder is that LSD's half-life in your blood plasma is only about 2.9 hours. Your body clears it from the bloodstream relatively quickly.
But you're still tripping for hours after that.
Right, because the trip lasts 8 to 12 hours.
Huh.
The molecule is quite literally jammed inside the brain's receptors, continuing to fire signals long after the blood is clear.
Okay, I need an analogy for this. LSD is basically a house guest who comes over, walks inside, and the front door physically jams shut behind them.
Exactly.
The cab left hours ago, but they're still stuck in your living room, forced to stay all day and just constantly talk to you.
A very persistent house guest. And that structural trap is entirely unique to LSD. Now let's pivot to DMT.
Right. N-dimethyltryptamine, the 15-minute sprinter.
DMT is completely different chemically. It's a dead simple tryptamine. Structurally, it's incredibly close to the serotonin your body already produces naturally.
Oh, wow.
And it's found everywhere in nature. It's the visionary component in ayahuasca, it's in hundreds of plant species, and trace amounts are even detectable in mammalian tissue.
Which is a whole separate rabbit hole we are definitely going down before we finish.
Oh, we will.
But back to the brain. When DMT hits that exact same 5-HT2A receptor, I'm assuming there's no lid to trap it.
No lid whatsoever. It has what we call a rapid-on, rapid-off binding profile. It slips into the receptor, flips the switch, and slips right back out.
Okay.
But the real reason it vanishes so quickly is because of how your body metabolizes it. DMT is highly susceptible to an enzyme called monoamine oxidase, or MAO.
What exactly does MAO do?
Think of MAO enzymes as your body's sanitation department for neurotransmitters. They constantly patrol your gut, your liver, and your brain, breaking down stray monoamines so your nervous system doesn't get overwhelmed.
So MAO is basically the body's rapid response security team.
Highly accurate. In fact, they are so efficient that if you swallow pure DMT, the MAO in your gut and liver shreds the molecule almost instantaneously.
So nothing happens.
It is completely destroyed before a single molecule can reach your brain. It literally has zero effect.
So how does anyone actually trip on it?
You have to bypass the gut. You have to smoke it, vaporize it, or inject it so it goes straight to the bloodstream and brain.
Oh, I see.
Or, in the case of indigenous ayahuasca brews, you pair the DMT-containing plant with a completely different plant that contains an MAOI, a monoamine oxidase inhibitor.
Ah, so the second plant temporarily drugs the security guards, allowing the DMT to sneak through the gut.
Exactly. But if you just smoke pure DMT, it bypasses the gut, hits the brain hard, but those MAO enzymes in the brain still sweep it up and metabolize it away within about 10 to 20 minutes.
Okay, so to bring it back to our house guest analogy, if LSD is the guy whose coat gets caught in the jam door and he's stuck for 12 hours, DMT is a ghost.
No.
It phases through the wall, sets off every alarm in the house, and completely vanishes before the MAO security team even pulls into the driveway.
It flares and fades. The entire story of their durations comes down to receptor kinetics and the body's metabolism.
And because of those entirely distinct biological clocks, the subjective experience of taking them is totally different.
Yeah.
The pharmacology literally dictates the phenomenology.
It shapes the entire journey. With LSD, because it's locked in that receptor for hours, you experience a long, gradual, introspective arc. You have time to sit with the perceptual changes.
The sources mention a landmark 2016 imaging study for LSD. What did that actually look like in the brain?
They used fMRI and saw a massive surge of cross-brain connectivity that slowly unfolded over several hours. Normally, segregated networks started communicating.
Like they were talking to each other for the first time.
But exactly. For example, the visual cortex became hyperconnected to areas it usually ignores. And this happened perfectly in step with the slow disintegration of the default mode network.
So it's a gradual bleed of information across the brain. If you're on LSD, it's like someone is slowly moving the furniture around in your mind. You can watch it happen, and you have time to reflect on why the couch is suddenly on the ceiling.
Exactly. But DMT isn't rearranging the furniture. DMT is replacing the entire room, along with the house and the street outside, in the blink of an eye.
A 15-minute sprint into another dimension.
Yes. A breakthrough dose of smoked DMT results in sudden, total immersion. Within 60 seconds, ordinary reality doesn't just distort. It is frequently replaced entirely by a fully realized, deeply vivid alternate space.
And we can't talk about that space without talking about what people find in there, the entity encounters.
Arguably the most striking feature of the DMT breakthrough.
Yeah.
Users reliably report feeling direct contact with autonomous beings.
Yeah.
The OTW article points to a massive 2020 study led by researcher Alan Davis. They surveyed 2,561 people about their single most memorable DMT entity experience.
Over 2,500 people. That's a shockingly large sample size for something that sounds honestly like science fiction.
It is. And the data was remarkable. The vast majority of these individuals didn't just see shapes. They reported deeply meaningful, often emotional encounters with entities that felt completely real.
Wow.
Most strikingly, a majority stated that this single 15-minute encounter fundamentally altered their core conception of reality.
When someone is experiencing that, what is the brain scanner showing? Because a 15-minute sprint that changes your fundamental worldview must look like a fireworks show on an EEG.
It looks like an immediate system override. Recent EEG and fMRI studies from 2019 and 2023 map the DMT state. They show a sudden total collapse of the cortex's normal hierarchical organization.
Just instant.
Yeah. The neural entropy we talked about earlier spikes massively and instantly, perfectly tracking with the user's subjective report of entering that alternate space.
Okay. I have to push back here, though. I'm thinking about what you said earlier, that DMT is a dead simple tryptamine, essentially a chemical cousin to our own serotonin.
Right.
If that's true, could these entities just be our own brain architecture trying to talk to itself? Like, when you completely shut down the default mode network, maybe we just suddenly perceive our own isolated neural subroutines, but our brain anthropomorphizes them into glowing beings.
That is one of the most profound debates in cognitive science right now, specifically within a framework called predictive coding.
Break that down for me.
Predictive coding suggests your brain is basically a prediction machine. It uses top-down models, your past experiences and beliefs, to guess what you're seeing, and uses bottom-up sensory data to correct those guesses.
Okay.
When DMT collapses the top-down hierarchy, the bottom-up signals run wild, entirely unconstrained.
So without the brain's manager in the room telling you what is you and what is the outside world, the system just allocates these entities out of its own raw data.
That's the neurological theory, yes.
Yeah.
The brain desperately tries to make sense of the massive internal signal diversity, and it defaults to one of its most hardwired templates, the presence of another mind.
Fascinating.
Science can map the structural collapse that allows the entities to appear, but it can't definitively answer the philosophical question of what they actually represent to human consciousness.
It's mind-bending. But here is where it gets really interesting. These two distinct time profiles, the 12-hour marathon and the 15-minute sprint, they aren't just fodder for philosophy podcasts anymore.
Not at all.
In 2026, these biological clocks are entirely dictating how pharmaceutical companies are attempting to turn these Schedule I substances into FDA-approved psychiatric medicines.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the entire clinical landscape right now is structured around these timers. And just to be absolutely clear, both LSD and DMT remain schedulized substances under the U.S. Controlled Substances Act.
Right. They currently have no accepted medical use outside of these tightly controlled trials.
Yes. And we want to make sure we're just reporting the facts of the landscape here impartially, regardless of where anyone stands on drug policy. But yes, the trials are moving incredibly fast.
Let's look at LSD first. It seems to have the lead.
It does. LSD is primarily being investigated for generalized anxiety disorder, or GAD. A biotech company called Definium Therapeutics has a pharmaceutically standardized version of LSD called MM120.
Right.
In 2025, they published a highly successful Phase 2b trial in the Journal of the American Medical Association. A Phase 2b trial, that's when they've already proven it's relatively safe, and now they're dialing in the exact dose to see how well it actually treats the disease, right?
Correct. And the results were so robust, showing durable anxiety reduction for months after a It's a massive logistical challenge. A company called Helus Pharma has been working on an intravenous DMT formulation called SPL-026, which showed success in a phase 2A trial for major depressive disorder back in 2025.
But 15 minutes just seems too short for lasting psychological integration.
And that exact problem birthed one of the most fascinating developments in this space extended state DMT.
Oh, right.
Scientists realized that if the problem is the MAO enzymes in the gut and liver destroying the drug, they could bypass them entirely using a continuous IV drip directly into the bloodstream.
Wait, so they're just constantly pumping it in?
Yes. By carefully titrating an IV drip, doctors can hold a patient in the DMT state not for 15 minutes, but for hours. In a 2025 trial, they successfully maintained a continuous DMT infusion for 6 hours with an acceptable safety profile.
I just find the irony of this so incredible. Science spent decades studying the crystal structure of LSD, marveling at this biological lid that traps the molecule to make it last 12 hours. And now, in 2026, we are using advanced IV drip technology to artificially stretch out DMT, essentially forcing it to mimic the duration of LSD.
We are hacking the ghost to make it act like the trapped house gas.
It's a brilliant way to look at it. They're taking the most abrupt, chaotic psychedelic and turning it into a tunable, highly controlled clinical tool.
Tunable, yeah.
If the patient gets overwhelmed, the doctor can just dial back the IV pump. And because DMT metabolizes so quickly, the trip dials back down within minutes. You can essentially steer the neural entropy in real time.
Which brings up the vital issue of safety. The OOTW Journal piece was very impartial about this, and we need to be too. These aren't magic bullets, and there are serious risks.
Absolutely. The physiological toxicity for both is remarkably low, meaning they don't suppress your breathing to cause overdose deaths like opioids, and they don't hijack the brain's reward centers to cause classic addiction.
But the psychological risks are substantial.
Right. Bad trips can cause severe panic, and these drugs can deeply destabilize people. They are strictly contraindicated, meaning absolutely off limits for anyone with a personal or family history of psychosis, schizophrenia, or bipolar disorder.
Exactly. And beyond psychology, their different biological clocks create different physical side effects. Because DMT is a rapid spike, it causes steep, sudden increases in blood pressure and heart rate that resolve in minutes.
Whereas LSD is different.
Right. LSD causes much milder cardiovascular effects, but because it's trapped in the receptor, those effects are prolonged over many hours.
And LSD carries that higher risk of HPPD, right?
Yeah.
Hallucinogen persisting perception disorder, where people experience visual snow or lingering visual disturbances long after the drug has cleared their system.
Yes. The marathon duration comes with a longer hangover of risk. And again, access outside of these specific, tightly monitored clinical trials is mostly limited to state-level decriminalization frameworks like Colorado's Proposition 122 or specific religious exemptions for ayahuasca use.
So if we're looking at the future of psychiatric medicine, we aren't really crowning a winner between the two.
Not at all. It comes down to clinical fit. If a patient needs a long, self-directed period to untangle deep-seated generalized anxiety, LSD's 12-hour marathon profile is perfectly suited for that.
Makes sense.
But if a clinic needs a tightly controlled, dialable window to quickly disrupt severe major depression, extended infusion DMT provides a revolutionary tool.
It is wild to think that we are living in a moment where the most profound mysteries of human consciousness, how our egos form, what reality actually is, whether entities exist in our neural architecture, are being directly mapped onto receptor kinetics and FDA trial phases.
It really is. Understanding the difference between the marathon and the sprint really is a cheat sheet to the future of psychiatry.
It certainly is. And analyzing them side by side, leaves us with one final deeply provocative scientific mystery to consider.
You mean the endogenous DMT theory? We briefly touched on that earlier.
Yes. It is still heavily debated in the literature whether the mammalian brain produces enough naturally occurring DMT to actually be psychoactive.
Right. Some scientists say it's just a metabolic byproduct, nothing more.
But if we assume the biological machinery is there,
yeah.
Well, this raises an astonishing question.
Okay, hit me.
If our brains do possess the enzymes to manufacture DMT, but our body's MAO security guards constantly and ruthlessly destroy it the moment it appears.
Yeah.
Is our everyday sober reality just a carefully regulated, slow-drip DMT trip that our brain is actively keeping in check?
Wow. Are you suggesting that normal consciousness is just a heavily suppressed breakthrough? That if the MAO enzymes took a day off, our baseline reality would look like a 15-minute hyperspace sprint?
It's a hypothesis that entirely flips the script on what it means to be hallucinating versus what it means to be sober.
That brings us right back to the beginning. Two biological timers, wired to the exact same switch in our minds, dictating every single second of what we perceive as real.
Pretty incredible.
It really is. Well, thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Keep questioning the clock.